this here in case I get parched while I'm speaking. Okay. Well, I'm Stephanie. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is 123 Step Foundation on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. at Denby Presbyterian Church in Newport News. So what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. So I grew up in Western New York, in a suburb of Rochester, New York. And both of my sides of my family are kind of affected by alcoholism. It's rotting both sides of the family tree. So my mom's dad was a very abusive alcoholic, physically abusive alcoholic growing up. My dad's dad was I didn't really know him very well because he passed away when I was young, but he was more of a verbally abusive alcoholic. And then my dad is an alcoholic who still drinks and has never tried to stop. And peeling the onion of alcoholism away, we're kind of figuring things out, but he's displays a lot of characteristics of narcissistic personality disorder, which is, we'll get to that in my story also. But anyway, it's very hard because, you know, growing up in an alcoholic home, as I'm sure many people understand, he wasn't physically abusive, but he was a functional alcoholic, so he would drink on the weekends. And I think it was important to my mom that we felt comfortable bringing friends over because I don't think she did when she was little. So, but it was still, I was always tense about it. And, I was a people pleaser. I was a perfectionist. I was afraid all the time. I wanted to control everything. So I was kind of, I did have good friends growing up, and but I was an overachiever, and I graduated third my class of 560 people in high school. I was first clarinet in band for most of that time in high school. I was on the varsity soccer team. I got a scholarship to undergrad because I always kind of felt like that I was, like nothing I ever did, I felt like my parents were really like proud of me. I know that sounds weird, but like, I wanted to make my mom happy, and she, I knew, hated alcoholics, but she was with my dad, so, there you go. And her brother was an alcoholic who actually, would admit it out loud, and I think he did a little bit of AA, but he drank till he died anyway. More, I think, of kind of like a self-punishment thing, because his son died when he was a teenager, so he punished himself a lot for that, but anyway, so I was, determined not to be an alcoholic. I joined up to sixth grade in high school, where you go to sixth grade classrooms and you're like, don't do drugs, kids. Don't drink alcohol. And I didn't drink alcohol until I went to college. And so there, we would get, I went to school in central New York, in Binghamton area, for undergrad. And they would bring these party buses to campus, on the weekend, and being a somewhat sheltered person, I would go out with some of the people on my floor and my friends that I made at school, and they put big X's on our hands downtown and serve us anyway. I never had a fake ID, and I was always very careful. I was only gonna have 3 drinks, and that was it, because I didn't want to participate in their little ritual of holding each other's hair back to vomit when they got back from wherever we were. I was like, that's gross, I'm going to bed. I finally drank to excess after I broke up with my high school boyfriend in sophomore year. And I was like, they were lying all this time. Alcohol does make you feel better. And then after that, I don't feel like I got the obsession and craving for it right away, but it was definitely building. I still only would go out occasionally on the weekend and stuff, and then I moved off campus in junior year with a bunch of friends from my floor, and just 3 other girls, and we lived in a duplex off campus, and a couple of the girls were older, so they would buy alcohol and we could have it, but I still wasn't old enough to buy it on my own. And when I bought it on my own, that's when I really, felt alcoholism coming on strong. I can remember being in my apartment by myself, when I turned 21 and like having a bottle of vodka there. And like, I still had an inkling, like drinking alone is bad. So I'd invite my friend over and we would watch TV and drink together. And then it wasn't so bad. But I was never like a party or go out kind of person. I was always like a drink at home kind of person. Because in my family, like it was okay to be an alcoholic as long as nobody else knew and you could still go to work and you still look good on the outside, like everything was okay. So, you know, I hid it from everyone for quite a long time. I'm a veterinarian, so I went to vet school after undergrad. And I, you know, I drank through vet school too. I lived with this girl who was like the quietest girl you could ever meet. Like she would laugh at your jokes, but she didn't really participate in conversation. So it was sort of like living alone anyway. We each had our own bedroom. And so I would just study and drink by myself, you know. And I wouldn't get obliterated at that point, but like, you know, still not normal to like have some vodka while you're studying. I did an internship for a year after vet school. I lived at home with my parents and hid drinking during that time, but I was so exhausted from working all the time and stuff that I, you know, didn't get to accelerate as much as I would have otherwise. And then I got married after that, and I thought, okay, like now every time I hit a life like mile marker, I would be like, all right, now I'm gonna quit. All right, now I'm gonna quit. Now I'm gonna quit. And every time I was thinking that, it was like more and more years had gone by and I'm like, this is not good. So I knew I had a problem a long time before I would admit it to anybody else. And I just was kind of like internally panicked because I couldn't figure out what to do. And I knew like I did not want to be an alcoholic, but I felt it happening to me and I couldn't stop it. You know, I'd feel that like panic feeling coming on in the evening, and then, you know, that went away when I would drink. And you know, it basically progressed. So I tried to quit when I got married, and my husband won't admit it, ex-husband, but he is also an alcoholic. And I know people argue about whether you can be addicted to marijuana. I don't think most people are, but he definitely is. Like he has the same like cravings that we would have for alcohol. Like he feels that towards weed. Like you can tell his personality changes when he doesn't have it and that sort of thing. So I consider it medicinal for him. So, and, you know, obviously that wasn't any good because I feel like I should, you know, be an Al-Anon too, but that's another whole thing to feel another day. But, you know, because I knew at some point, like, one of us was going to have to do something about our situation, and I was pretty sure it was going to have to be me. So, you know, we moved to Minnesota, and again, I tried to quit, but at some point, it just becomes like, if you can't beat them, join them, you know? Like, I just tried, and I would try only drinking this kind of alcohol, only drinking on these days, only, you know, special occasions, but, like, Tuesday is pretty special, and, like, you know, I just, you know, would find any reason. Like, it could be something really bad, it could be something really good, but, like, anything was a good reason to drink, right? And I would like to try to console myself with the fact that I would drink at home. I wasn't out partying. I wasn't cheating. I wasn't, like, doing things except for alcohol, which was, like, my medicine for life, like, dealing with life, you know? I figured after a hard day at work, like, why not, you know? So we have three children. I have three children. My daughter Lily is 10, Lucy is 8, and my son Daniel is 3. So, I got pregnant and I did not drink during my first pregnancy, and I thought, okay, like, I'm gonna be like a you know, cheap drunk after this. I'm only gonna drink a few ciders at a time. It's gonna be great. I made it through this. Now I can definitely be a normal drinker, right? No. And maybe for a couple weeks, like, I was better, but no, you know, it wasn't any better. And then it accelerated, and then I got pregnant with my second daughter. And I remember I was at my parents' house when I found out, and we were like just having like party weekend, and I was like, I just bought a new bottle of vodka. Oh, I can't drink any of it. And so, it was pretty like not pleasant probably that weekend. So again, you know, I thought, well, surely if I have not, you know, of course I didn't go to AA or seek out help during any of these times where I was sober. I was dry during these times, and it was, you know, I know the miracle of birth and all that, and you're supposed to be like a happy pregnant lady, and I tried to be, but, you know, always there was that little kernel of alcoholism waiting for the 9 months to be over, you know, and then I kept thinking, like, okay, maybe this time I'll be better, but I wasn't, and then the third time I got pregnant, I literally sat in the bathroom and I cried because I did not know if I was going to be able to stop again. And I consoled myself. I did stop again for 9 more months. And I consoled myself with the fact that I would never have to do that again. but like basically when I was drinking, my goal in life, I never saw anything past like 40s, you know. Like I wanted my kids to be old enough to get, you know, married and have their own lives. And then if I wanted to die a horrible alcoholic death, that was my choice, like, that was my right, right? But, you know, that's a horrible philosophy on life, just waiting to die, and, you know, it is a fatal progressive illness. So, after my son was born, I, you know, was down a dark rabbit hole really quickly, and sort of in between these times, so, the eve of my daughter's fourth birthday, my middle child's fourth birthday, I was doing like a little slumber party for them in the living room. And we were watching this movie from the 80s called Hug a Bunch, which probably nobody knows but me. I believe it was a Hallmark movie, I'm not 100% sure. But it was cute. And so that night, of course, you know, even though we were doing something nice, I was drinking, you know, secretly while I was doing this. And the next morning, I woke up with my head on a towel on the couch, and there was some blood on the towel. And I walked to the kitchen, and my ex-husband came out of the bedroom, he was my husband at the time, and he said, "Look, I'm real sorry about what I yelled at you this morning, but I couldn't really get you to move and get up on the couch any other way." And I was like, okie dokie, like I didn't know what he yelled at me because I couldn't remember. And then he had left a puddle of blood on the floor, dried blood on the floor for me to clean up. And he said, that's for you to clean up. I just want you to know that's to punish you for, you know, how scared I was when I came out and thought you might be dead on the floor. And so, you know, all these things are rushing through my head. I thought, my God, I almost died and left my kids without a mother on her birthday. Like, I'm a horrible person. Like, you would think that this, and the guilt of it and the shame, and you would think that the shame, if an incident could shame you into being sober, like, that would have been it, right? And the circumstances of the incident are not what I thought they were at the time. It turns out that it wasn't because I drank and passed out and that's what happened, but at the time, that's what I thought happened. And so it's just as bad because it could have been, you know? And so, but yeah, I mean, I maybe was sober for a couple of weeks, dry for a couple of weeks, and then I was drinking again. And I mean, everything I tried, I couldn't stop on my own. I couldn't. I tried hypnosis. I tried Craig Beck's Stop Drinking Expert. And everything, you know, the thing I was avoiding AA because I don't know why, because it's free and anyone can go, so like, how good can it be, right? And we talk about God a lot, which is like, I was a little equivocal about that because we weren't a very religious family growing up, and you know, I hoped in God my whole life. I hoped I was doing the right thing. I was trying to be a good person, and that. But then I was like, but I must be doing something wrong because I'm being punished by being made an alcoholic, which is horrible. I wouldn't wish this on anybody, and it does. It's horrible. It's like hell on earth, but we have AA. So, and on February 2nd, 2021, so I had been going to AA for about 6 months. So my ex-husband had his friend kind of come take me and babysit me at meetings for a while until she like outed me at the meeting, basically like, I have this friend. I don't know why she keeps relapsing when blah, blah, blah. I'm not an alcoholic, by the way. And then she's like, I outed myself because she'd been coming with me for weeks, even after I was like, I'm good. And she's like, these people are great. I'm like, I know. Why don't you go, though? Like, I'm not going to share when you're around. But yeah, so then, and anyway, she ended up, and you know, my inclination when I was like outed in front of everyone was to like run away and never come back. But what they kept saying, you know, they were the kindest people I'd ever met. They kept saying, keep coming back. We're glad you're here. And I was like, well, if you say so, I guess. And, you know, it was kind of my escape at that point because, so my ex-husband, it has narcissistic personality disorder, which has come out, you know, in our divorce. And he used alcohol to control me for many years, which is not an excuse for my behavior, but it made it, you know, he would gaslight me and make everything was my fault. And, you know, I was a worthless drunk. And even after I was in AA and in sobriety, I was a worthless drunk. And at everything I was trying to do, all my amends were not good enough. And my steps, I wasn't doing them right. And, you know, he really tainted my view of Al-Anon for a little while because he would use their phrases against me, you know, and tell me his sponsor said to, whenever I was talking, to just picture the word alcoholic on my forehead. I was like, okay, so, yeah, he was verbally abusive throughout our life together, but and I always thought it was only affecting me. But, you know, when COVID hit, and I was, you know, we were all stuck at home, he took my keys and my wallet and hid them and said, I would do anything just to keep you safe. And I said, that seems like you're enjoying, like, having control over me. No, I'm not. No, totally not. So, you know, being an alcoholic that I am, I was not comfortable being trapped like that. So I had an extra key made to the van, the fob thing and everything, and found the wallet and hid my debit card. So I would, you know, and I continued to drink and find a way. And he was like, what are you doing? Like, how are you doing this? I'm like, oh, I have a still underground, just kidding. Like, I didn't, but I did have a booze bush, which I was use on my smuggling route up the driveway. You know, I would find a way, you know, like I would find a way. And it was almost like my way of like being like, you can't control me, which is not a healthy thing, but like, it's true. And, you know, I realized a lot of things throughout the time. So the night that I, you know, was on the floor bleeding, the wound was on top of my head and there was blood spatter on the ceiling. And I think what had happened is he tried to kill me, but I don't remember. And so I'm in forensics classes now, which is good. So someday, I don't think there's a statute of limitations on attempted murder, so I'm excited. But, you know, it brings things into a lot of perspective when you look back and you realize, like, somebody you thought loved you and wouldn't do anything to hurt you intentionally has been spreading rumor, you know, just telling everybody, like, bad stuff about me that I didn't even know. And so I separated from him in September 2021. So I was about 9 months sober then. And I know we're not supposed to make any major decisions for the first year, but I talked to my therapist about it and I talked to my then sponsor about it. And I almost had a nervous breakdown. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm trapped. And he, you know, so anyway, I got the kids, served him on November 9th. I got the kids. We went to a hotel for a few days. He hired PIs to stalk me and tried to text all my friends. And anyway, it's been a hard couple of years, but AA is what saved my life. So it gave me a place to go that was safe. It gave me people I could talk to and trust. And it gave me the miracle of being able to, you know, for a day at a time, control my addiction. You know, I never thought that I would be able to stand here and be almost 2 years sober, ever. I mean, I was at the end of my drinking, it was February 2nd, 2021. It was the day I started IOP. And I, like I say, I'd been going to AA for about 6 months and everything everyone said was really good, but I just didn't know how to give something up to God, which I was sure was meant for me for being a punishment. And I, you know, I had hope in God, but I didn't really have faith. Like, I didn't know how I was supposed to give this big problem to him, because I'm like, sure, take this. You know, I wanted you to take this for a long time. But it was just a miracle. It was finally being honest with someone. So I did the entrance interview with my, now he's my therapist, but at the time he was one of the therapists at the IOP. We did that like 2 or 3 hour long entrance interview, and I actually was honest about the questions, and he was like, so you're like a 9 out of 11 on the scale of alcoholism, which I don't know what the actual scale is called, but, and he's like, no, you're not the worst we've seen, but you're pretty bad. And I was like, okay, well, there's objective evidence. I belong here. Like, I am really bad. And, you know, it's a miracle for me that I came into the rooms and I, you know, have faith in God now. And I know that this isn't a punishment. It's meant to be a challenge for sure. And it really is. And I still try to take my will back all the time and make things my way. And I'm not patient. And I don't like the time takes time things. I want it to be now. I wasted enough time. You know, so I just feel like I have hope now. My sponsor and I haven't, so here's my little bit of AA, and I, you know, everything I say about AA, I get passionate about it. So if anything offends you guys, you know, it's my opinions only, obviously not speaking for AA as a whole. But so originally I had a sponsor who had over 30 years in the program. She's an elderly woman. Not like elderly, she's in her 70s, but, you know, she did not, I mean, she took me through the steps a little bit. She didn't read the big book with me at all. She was more like, hey, let's go out to lunch after meeting. I'm like, okay, I had fun. But, like, she thought she was my higher power, and so, like, she apparently expected me to run everything by her. She was spreading rumors about me to people in the rooms. And after my 1 year, she dumped me out of the blue because I posted something on Facebook that she didn't approve of that I had nothing to do with her anyway. And I was like, this is... And then, like, 2 weeks later, my ex-husband got kicked out of the house for an emergency protective order for assaulting me. So I was like, kind of my whole world got shattered a little bit after my 1 year. And I had to rebuild my whole AA network. I love AA. I love everybody in AA. I just, there was a lot of trust issues because I had trust issues coming in, and then I had them again when someone tells you I'm your mom and then dumps you after your 1 year. So I rebuilt my network of people in the groups that I go to, and I found other groups to go to, and I branched out, and I got a new sponsor on Zoom from Colorado. So there's definitely no conflict of interest there because he doesn't know anything about anybody in the rooms around here. And our philosophies on AA are much more aligned, which is really nice. You know, love and tolerance. You know, we talk a lot about you can be the AA member, the kind of AA member you want to be, you know. Aside from the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. You can't kick people out of AA. You know, I love AA. I think it's the best place. And my sponsor and I were talking, and he's had a much more difficult life than I've had. He's had congenital bone cancer. He's 52, which is like ancient for the disease he has, apparently. I'm sure he's in chronic pain every single day. And he still meets with anybody who wants to read the big book with him. You know, once a week, we'll read for an hour. He hosts meetings 4 times a week, and they have to come to his apartment now because he can't go out. He's got one lung. His dad shot him in the past. I mean, it's just a miracle to me to listen to him and to know that somebody who, you know, is out there helping other people, having hope in the world when they, you know, shouldn't even by all means be alive today. That's the kind of people who are in here, you know, with us. That's the kind of people who inspire me. When I listen at meetings, I listen to other people and I think, you know, everyone has some worse things or some better things going on in their life than I do. I'm not the only one, you know, like, I'm not alone. That's one thing I've heard in meetings, you know, you never have to be alone again. And that's something I always felt alone. You know, I could be in a crowded room and I feel alone. I never felt a part of things. I always felt weird and different and separate. And I'm, you know, the other thing that we talk about a lot is that our alcoholism progresses mentally, even if we're not drinking. So if we're not practicing the program and we're not active and doing service and working with others, then our brain is still getting sicker, even though we're not drinking. So, like, that's where you can get the people who really, sometimes need a little more practice, I think, you know, just living the principles of the program. And that's, you know, I feel like it's so important to include everyone. We, you know, welcome newcomers. I feel like a lot of the meetings have gotten smaller. We were talking about that a little bit before the meeting, just after COVID and everything, and I don't know why exactly, but I'm super grateful for Zoom because I did my IOP on Zoom, and I Zoom meetings now when I have to stay home with my kids, because thankfully I have them with me except for every other weekend, which, you know, if I wasn't sober, I wouldn't have them. If I wasn't sober, I wouldn't be alive right now. I wouldn't be able to get out of this horrible relationship that has consumed about half of my life. You know, I drank alcoholically and was in the relationship for 19 years. You know, that's a long time. And it was hell, you know, being controlled by something that can make you do things that you would never do when you're sane and sober. That's like hell on earth to me. I never want to feel like that again. And if all I have to do to keep that feeling from coming back is come to meetings, talk to other alcoholics, work with other alcoholics, read with other alcoholics, I'm happy to do that. Yeah, nobody wants to admit all the things that are wrong with them or speak in public about their most embarrassing moments. But of course, you know, we're talking to each other, and I've never been anywhere at a meeting hearing someone speak that I didn't, you know, resonate with something that they're saying, or, you know, understand something where they're coming from, or, you know, have something about them and their story that relates to me. So I feel like AA to me is like a family. You know, there's going to be annoying members of your family that you don't like, but you got to, you know, still love them and tolerate them until, you know, I'm sure that, that's the thing. Nobody's perfect, you know. I have to be easier on myself a lot of times because I have to realize, like, I'm never going to be perfect, you know, no matter how hard I try. I'm not going to be a perfect mom. I'm hardly ever on time for things. That's my resolution for this year. I was even early, so I'm doing good. But, you know, it's a work in progress. And I think that's the thing about AA that's so awesome to me is that no matter how many years of sobriety you have, you can keep coming back. You can keep working. Your program can keep evolving. You can keep learning and, you know, doing new things. And that's hope I never had before. You know, I never looked forward to the future before. And now I actually am studying for a new career. I'm getting out of a horrible relationship. I've got my kids. You know, he tried to frame me for a crime, tried to get me arrested for child neglect. Luckily, that didn't work out in his favor the way he planned. But it's been a nightmare for 2 years, and I'm happy. Yay, I'm happy, joyous, and free still, even though, like, the worst 2 years of my life has just happened. So, God willing, February 2nd will be my 2 years, and I'm really excited. I'm happy. I have friends who will come over to see me in a different part of town, and I'm happy that you guys invited me here to be part of your meeting. I love this room. I know your church, you're normally in the other one, but I'm glad we got to be in here because I like this room. But I just feel like AA is so amazing, and you know, they say it's not a cure-all, and I guess that's true, but you know, you get out of it what you put into it, right? Like, we have a friend at one of my meetings that says, don't be surprised at the results you get from the work you don't do. And I think what I had hoped from the beginning of coming into AA is I was going to walk in the room and then suddenly feel, like, cured. And that's obviously not what happens. Like, you actually have to work the steps and practice them in your life. Make amends to people, which can be awkward and not fun. And nobody wants to admit the worst things about themselves, but the thing I think that comforted me the most was learning more about alcoholism, learning that it's never going to go away. I need this treatment. I'm really bad. Like, if I don't go to keep going to meetings all the time and I don't work with other alcoholics, I am going to go back, and this is my last chance, and I know that. Like, I feel that in my heart. I just know. And so anyway, everything today is better than it ever was when I was drinking. Even though my thinking is still sometimes, you know, all down in the dumps, and I take things, you know, all personally, which, you know, life isn't meant to be a personal affront to me. And there, you know, my sponsor will say, you know, sometimes we'll think like, oh, can I just have a break now? And the answer is no. Like, we never get a break. But it's what you make of it. You know, you can choose how you feel about things, and the serenity prayer, you know, every day at a time you take the present, because if you dwell on the past or you start imagining the future, then you're just, you know, you're not in control of those things anyway, so it doesn't really matter. You might as well just try to appreciate the things you have right now. So anyway, I am grateful for the program. I think I've run out of wonderful things to say. I guess I wasn't super long, but I think we can fill the time with some other things, I think, right? Okay. Well, thank you for letting me speak, and I will go sit down.
Thank you, Stephanie.